So I'd like to acknowledge my collaborators on this work, all of them from ARS, John Baker, Kurt Spokas, and Tim Parkin, and our funding sources, including a NIFA Air Quality Program grant. As everyone probably knows, non-steady state chambers are the most commonly used method for measuring trace gas fluxes of greenhouse gases such as nitrous oxide, and N2O is the gas that I work with most of the time, so I'll be using N2O in all of my examples and my graphs. So non-steady state methods are basically using an open bottom chamber that's placed on the surface, followed by sampling of that chamber headspace over time, and then determining the flux from the rate of change in that gas concentration. And it has many advantages. It's relatively inexpensive, easy to use, but probably most importantly, it's well suited to replicated plot studies where we need statistically robust data to make comparisons among treatments in small plot type of environments. It has a few important limitations. The one that I'll be focusing on is that by placing the chamber on the surface, you're altering the flux, you're altering the quantity that you're trying to measure by disrupting the concentration gradient. And we've known about this for many decades. It's really just a logical thing. As that gas accumulates in the chamber, it suppresses diffusion, leads to nonlinearity in the chamber data, as shown there. The slope is decreasing over time. So if you use linear regression to estimate the slope of that line, obviously you're going to underestimate the slope occurring close to time zero, which is the information that you want. So some nonlinear models have been developed over the years to try to address this problem. Here's an example. We have some actual data. We can apply linear regression, and in this case, we actually get a fairly high R-squared value when we do that. And we can calculate a flux from that data set of about 72 micrograms of nitrogen per meter squared per hour. We can use the quadratic regression model, first proposed by Wagner in 1997, get a flux that's about 20% higher than the linear regression flux. So presumably, we're doing a better job of estimating that slope at time zero. Or we can use the Hutchinson and Mosier model, which is probably one of the most commonly used models, and get an even higher estimate of the flux for this particular data set. So have these models solved that problem of the chamber effect? Well, for probably a couple of decades, the assumption was yes, that these models were the best that we could do to address the problem, until 2006, when another model was introduced by Livingston et al., the NDFE model, and their definite answer to that question was no. You can see here the flux estimate is higher yet, 35% higher than linear regression. So one of the important conclusions from their analysis was that these other nonlinear models can substantially underestimate the flux depending on the particular conditions. And those conditions are the chamber volume to area ratio, or the height of the chamber, the deployment time, the length of time you have the chamber on the surface, and also the soil air-filled porosity. The soil properties enter into this, and each of those are going to increase the nonlinearity in the data and increase the bias with errors up to 40%. If you look at how these other nonlinear models were obtained, it's not surprising that they failed. Quadratic regression is just a simple polynomial fit to the data without any reference to any physical processes at all. The HM model has some theoretical basis to it, but it's actually quite simplified in describing diffusion. I've listed the assumptions there. Bottom line, it's making some extremely simplifying assumptions in order to have a simple ordinary differential equation to describe the change in the chamber concentration over time. So enter Livingston et al. They took a more rigorous approach. They used a partial differential equation to describe gas transport in the soil. So they have transient change in soil gas storage, non-steady state diffusion, and a source term that can vary arbitrarily with depth in the soil. And the key thing that they did was they were able to derive an analytical solution to that equation with an upper boundary condition that accounts for accumulation of gas within a chamber of height H. And also, the solution they came up with has the initial flux at time zero in the equation. So it's an implicit solution for that term. So then what they did was also developed a nonlinear regression solver to solve for that parameter, which in theory sounded quite compelling, but in practice had several problems. It converged to multiple solutions, required 4 or 5 time points, which is more than most studies can offer, and was not easily adapted to spreadsheets. So bottom line was it's seen very little use in the literature at all since it was published. But we think that the underlying theory behind it is pretty robust, and that analytical solution can be useful in other ways. The reason that it's useful is because it allows for an error analysis. So you can make some assumptions about your chamber conditions, about your deployment time and initial flux, then from that, using that equation to generate some theoretical time series data for those conditions, and then with that data, calculate the flux using your other available models, compare it to the flux that was used as an input to the equation, and do an error analysis. The other reason it turned out to be very useful is that when you express the bias relative to the flux, the actual flux, it turns out to be independent of what the flux is or the source vertical magnitude. So you can more generally broadly generalize the error analysis results. The third reason it's useful is because this tau term that shows up 4 times in that solution has physical meaning. It's the square of the chamber height divided by the soil gas storage term times the soil gas diffusion coefficient, and those terms can be measured or estimated based on soil properties. And then finally, we found that after doing hundreds of error analyses that the percent underestimation for a given flux calculation method, whether it's linear regression or HM or quad, can be scaled with this scaling parameter, natural log of tau over dt. And so as you move from right to left, that's expressing that your chamber height is decreasing, your deployment time is increasing, or your soil field porosity is increasing, and your bias is increasing. And so this allows us to do that kind of error analysis where we can take some hypothetical conditions for our chambers and our soil and look at what our bias is going to be, which we think can be useful at least in the initial stages of designing chamber protocols. So, for example, if we assume a deployment time of 40 minutes and look at a range of chamber heights and these soil properties shown there, we can compare the bias that we're going to get with these 3 different models, and you can see that about half of the bias is removed when you move from linear regression to these other models, but there's still a substantial amount of bias there depending on the other factors. Also, it shows that the HM and quadratic models actually agree fairly well. In this case, we're looking at just the quadratic method and comparing different deployment times, and not surprisingly, it shows the bias is highly sensitive to the deployment time. And then we can do the same, this time varying the soil water content, and it shows how much the bias varies with water content. And we think this is important because it can create artifacts and apparent differences in fluxes, which are actually due to the fact that your water content may be changing over time or between treatments. And so this part of chamber dynamics is not as widely recognized, but as I said, I think it's important. The theory says it's important. So the modeling shows that a soil with greater airfield porosity appears to have a lower flux when the actual flux is the same if you compare two water contents, for example. And the reason this happens is because after placing the chamber on the surface, more gas accumulates within the soil itself in that higher porosity soil as opposed to accumulating in the chamber. And so we thought about some other ways we can make this method a little bit more useful. So one thing you can do is assume a given set of soil conditions that might be sort of the worst case scenario for your soil. So your lower bulk density or lowest bulk density and lowest water content that you might expect during an experiment. And one thing you can do from that is estimate what maximal deployment time you can use for a given level of bias. And this will set the upper limit on the bias for that worst case condition. So for these conditions, for the quadratic equation, we can get a relationship between bias and deployment time. So if you tell yourself you're willing to live with a 20% bias, you can use a deployment time of 1.4 hours. But that decreases quite rapidly. If you want a 10% bias, that's down to 0.3 hours. So these are theoretically based criteria that possibly could decrease the absolute bias and also these artifacts arising from differences in soil properties. But one problem is that optimum protocols can't always be used for a couple of reasons or three reasons. First, when you use larger chambers or shorter deployment times, you have measurement error becomes more important. And you're lowering your sensitivity to detecting fluxes. And I've been working actually with Tim Parkin on a project looking at a method for estimating your detection flux for a given set of conditions, and Tim will have a poster on this tomorrow. Also, logistical considerations. Many times we have many chambers out there. We're trying to move from one chamber to the next, back to the first chamber within a given amount of time. So we can't always use a very short deployment time in many cases. So what we've also done is develop what we're calling post hoc bias correction, where you can take your measured soil properties at each flux measurement event and then calculate a bias value for that event, apply it to your measured flux, and then come up with a bias-corrected value. And so the limitations of this, you have to make more measurements, although in many cases these kinds of studies were already measuring water-filled pore space and temperature, so that actually provides most of the information. But then these measurements are also introducing additional error, and we need to do more work to see how those errors are actually going to propagate into our bias estimate. It's also difficult to validate this method because, especially in the field, you don't know what the true flux is, so you don't know what you're comparing to. Laboratory methods also have their problems because it's difficult to simulate field conditions of gas transport in the lab. We've tried to do some empirical evaluation. For example, we're comparing the bias-corrected flux estimates at different deployment times and using different flux calculation methods and finding reasonable agreement, so that's some degree of validation. The model also has theoretical limitations. It does have some simplifying assumptions in there, otherwise they wouldn't have been able to have that nice, elegant solution. It assumes the soil is vertically uniform. It's one-dimensional diffusion, and there's no sink term in there at all. So what we've been trying to do on this is use some numerical techniques where we remove those assumptions and solve that equation numerically for a range of conditions and then compare it to the analytical solution and try to come up with some conditions where we think that analytical solution is valid. So, for example, if you have a vertically non-uniform soil, which most of the time you do, if you use the data from the upper 10 centimeters as an input to the model, then the analytical solution performs fairly well, except when you have very highly porous soils with shallow chamber insertion depths, where then you have two-dimensional diffusion, which can cause diffusion away from your chamber in the lateral direction, in which case that solution doesn't hold. And also when you have high N2O or other consumption rates, say of methane, for example, and when you have a negative flux, then this theory is not going to hold. We've also looked in the literature just to kind of compare different studies, as some of the work that Philippe has done, showing doing surveys of methodologies, there's quite a wide range of methodologies being used. There's really very little standardization. So the six studies shown here, you can see the range of chamber heights, deployment times, also soil properties are ranging, and the flux calculation model is ranging. If we use our techniques and we assume a constant water content across all those studies, it shows that the bias for those studies is ranging quite a bit. So this raises some questions about cross-comparison studies, about large-scale emissions estimates, and even model validation studies, and certainly calls for some improvements and or more uniformity in our methodologies. So to conclude, I'll just say that most of these bias problems would actually go away if we could use chamber deployment times less than 10 minutes or so. And this is problematic for a few reasons, as I mentioned before. For one thing, we need fairly high precision instruments capable of detecting low fluxes with minimal measurement error in order to do that. These, I think, are available, but they're fairly expensive at this point and not very commonly used. And so until these instruments are available, I think the method that I described here could be useful for decreasing these biases. So thank you very much.